Good Tuesday to all. It is Chiefs Live. Chiefs call-in show here on Tuesday on KCChiefs.com. We are live with me, as always, Adam Pellegrino, running behind the scenes, and producer Brad Young. Brad Young, if you don't follow the show every week, if you're just tuning in for the first time, is a Nebraska alum. And the fact that I saw him at work on Sunday for the game that we will get into here in a bit, that 44-13 Broncos victory over the Chiefs at Arrowhead, Brad showed up for work, and that was a positive step for you, Brad. Because
what am I going to do, not show up for work? Just
I was worried about you, man.
Well, I didn't have a smile on my face. No. I didn't have a smile on my face after the game, but hey, what are you going to do? Huskers played hard, and hopefully, as painful as it is to say, I hope Texas represents the Big 12 well in the national championship.
If you were there, you'd been right there next to the Pelini brothers yelling at Texas after the game.
Yes. I completely agree.
Hey, that Colt McCoy, that is one cool, smooth quarterback. That biological clock in his head, that thing is better than any instrument you can buy. He knew that there was a half second. No
what
big
killed
deal.
Me, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a Husker fan, born and bred, is the fact that everyone in the country was cheering for Nebraska, unless you're a Texas fan. Because everyone loves upsets. Everyone loves chaos and all that good stuff. And, you know, it was tough. We lost. Tough game. I'm surprised we played as well as we did. But the hardest thing is come to Arrowhead, and, you know, we got obviously everyone that works here is a big football fan.
Full day of Arrowhead.
Everyone's a big football fan, Missouri fans, KU fans, saying we're cheering, you're cheering. And everyone you run into, Josh, though, I will say, was the nice guy who didn't even say anything to me about it until late yesterday.
And we now shame you 48 hours later here on Chiefs Live on a Tuesday. Hey, I actually had friends at the game. They said that they're up in the nosebleeds, and they said the people that are watching the game had no idea what happens because they didn't show the replay at the end in Jerry Vision.
They couldn't see what happened.
So he said, "Well, but you can see the time." He said the emotional roller coaster going through that crowd during that waiting period was absolutely incredible. Watch. They're in the Nebraska section, but they said naturally it's the games in Texas, and there was tons of Texas people there, and they just said the roller coaster was enormous, and it was indescribable and something you can see. Speaking of Nebraska, Texas, that game and how it relates to the Chief, hey, House of Spears was amazing. This guy.
You betcha.
This guy. You know how I feel about this guy.
He is he's been doing it all year, and the reason I know why you're relating to the Chiefs, if we end up with the top 10 pick, he's one of those guys that everyone loves. Mel Kiper and his hair. Love this guy. But, you know, God, on both sides of the ball, there's players all over the place. But step up on the national stage was
there's players everywhere. I just like the way that guy plays. And now he gets rewarded by being one of the five finalists for the Heisman Trophy.
First defensive lineman to be a finalist since 1991. The guy slips my name, but he ended up getting fourth.
We were talking about this before the show, and the Heisman doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It really doesn't, because it's supposed to be the best college football player, hands down. And people, you'll hear him talk, Sue, he's the best college football player, hands down this year. He had the best year, but he won't win. Well, why won't he win? Well, because everyone's going to vote for a quarterback or a running back or a wide receiver or whatever. Who was the last defensive lineman to win it, Brad? No one.
There wasn't.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The last true defensive player to win it was Charles Woodson. And I think it all started going downhill the year that Adrian Peterson was a freshman who had one of the most unbelievable years any running back can ever have. But the good old boys, you know, you can't give it to a freshman. You can't do this. So Matt Leinart ends up winning it. Although very deserving, Adrian Peterson went
my,
on.
My problem
he was
with,
injured.
Here's,
he never
here's,
got the award.
Here's
I'm
my
saying.
Problem with it, Brad. We're talking about you have guys like Jason White winning the Heisman in Oklahoma. He's not drafted. How can you be the best college football player and not be drafted? Don't tell me, he had some knee problems and he didn't project well into the pros. If you're the best college football player and you win the Heisman Trophy, you should at least be drafted by a pro team.
I think
that's end of story. I don't think there's any argument on this. There's supplemental picks at the end of the seventh round where you're drafting just whomever. Those are no different than the guys you're signing as a college free agent once you get to that point.
I think the quarterback's a unique position in that.
There's been plenty of guys that never get drafted.
I agree. I just think it should be the best college football player, not the best pro prospect. I don't think Todd McShay and Mel Kiber should be picked.
It doesn't have to be the best pro prospect.
It doesn't, but with the hype, that all these people get talking about the NFL, and the NFL is such a huge, huge thing now. That's one thing. I mean, obviously Tim Tebow is an exception to that rule, but then again, I mean, if you're a running back or if you're a wide receiver or something like that, get it, obviously someone's going to pick you up.
I just think that if you're the best college football player, you don't have to be a top 10 pick. That's fine. I get the transition between the college game and the pro game. But there's 256 selections.
Wouldn't you call it?
And if you're
it,
not one of the best 256, I don't think you should be the Heisman Trophy winner. That's just me.
Do you see it as a most valuable player, or do you see it as the best player?
Because the best player difference in college football. That's who I think should win the Heisman Trophy. And to me, this year, and who put together the best year, it would be the defensive tackle from Nebraska. Anyway, we're getting off subject here. We'll have plenty of time to discuss this.
Get
us all riled up. We're already talking draft, but hey. You know that song, Brad, What Goes Up, What Comes Down? Do you know that song? Have you ever heard that oldie?
I'm where you want it.
You have it?
Yeah, I hear it. Ride a painted pony, let the spinning wheel spin.
Spinning wheel spin, that's fitting.
Hold on a second, we're going to start that over. I think I cut it a little early. We'll just hear the beginning of that real quick. This is good. We'll turn into a radio DJ show here.
Yeah, there you go. Spin the tracks. And you get the buzzer. Anyway, the whole point is what goes up, what comes down. The Chiefs 2 weeks ago.
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Special thanks to Howie Ehrenberg upstairs for pointing that one out.
2 weeks ago, the Chiefs are on cloud nine. Back-to-back victories for the first time in over a year. They were going for the third straight win. The first time since 2006. Go to San Diego, get thumped. Okay, maybe it's a fluke. Four turnovers, 28 points off those turnovers. Game gets out of hurry very quickly. Chiefs come back home, take on the Denver Broncos, another AFC West division rival. They take them on. You're thinking, hey, Chiefs are going to get back on track. First of three home games to end the five-game stretch here at Arrowhead. Broncos don't win in December. It just doesn't happen. 1-17 all time in December games in Kansas City. John Elway couldn't even do it. He got hurt. Hugh Millen had to do it in that one win. But they come through, and they beat us. And now all of a sudden, it's a 60-point differential through the last 2 weeks. And the Chiefs go from cloud nine, things are getting going, to the bottom of the barrel. And it really just hasn't been pretty. We said the 60-point scoring differential, turnovers. There's been seven turnovers over the past 2 weeks. 45 points have come out of those turnovers. You're not going to win a lot of games doing that. There's been plenty of drops. The Chiefs lead the league in drop balls. There was the big one, obviously, that's been shown on replay plenty of times here in Kansas City and in other sports coverage on Bobby Wade in that big play. 10 runs of 10 yards or more for the Broncos offense. The Chiefs had been improving against stopping the run. The Broncos run for over 200 yards in that game. First time the Chiefs are swept by the division at home since 1977, and the first time since 1983 that the Chiefs allow 40 or more points in back-to-back games. So you can say that we went from high, we went to low. What do you do from here? You got to put it behind you. We'll talk. We'll take calls here. But what can you do other than prepare? Talk about progress in a minute. Coach Haley, the way he breaks down the season, and he's not the first one to break down the season this way. Herm Edwards talked about the four quarters. Dick Vermeil talked about the four quarters. Coach Haley talks about it a lot, but it's not a new line of thinking like a lot of people think. Coaches break down the season this way. And 0 for 4, 1 for 3, still went 2 out of 2 in the third quarter. So let's hope moving forward the Chiefs get it back together and go 3-1 in this final quarter and get some charge here going into the offseason before 2010. What's on tap for tomorrow, Brad, on kcchiefs.com? Seren Petro and the Red Zone, who's our guest?
Seren Petro will be live in studio speaking with Glenn Dorsey.
Glenn Dorsey's the man,
yes.
Huh? Okay, so Glenn Dorsey with Seren Petro here on KC Chiefs tomorrow, 3 p.m. Central. Make sure you tune in for that.
And if you don't catch it, you could always catch the podcast. Yeah, go to kcchiefs.com like, and you'll be able to find it and all that good stuff. I know we always have the podcast from this show and of Seren Petro, the Red Zone. Just, if you're at work or something and you're at the gym doing whatever you want to do and you want to listen to your Chiefs news, it's always there for you here on KCChiefs.com.
So hello to the people of the future listening in on the podcast.
I guess.
But anyway, we've got a call from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Leal is on the phone. What is going on?
Hey, Josh.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I have a question or comment, I guess you could say.
Okay.
With the late season that we have, players are all dinged and beat up. Maybe a suggestion. Instead of the players being on the practice field so long, maybe more film time study through the opponents and give them a little bit rest and recharge. Sometimes, like, the words are being heard, but not really
sure
fully focused. Maybe that might be a suggestion. I'm a huge Chiefs fan.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic suggestion. And you talk about, lowering down the intensity in practice a little bit. Time-wise, the Chiefs haven't done that, Leal. They've been keeping the same schedule for the most part. There have been some days recently, a few weeks ago, the guys weren't in full pads on the tomorrow. Normally is a Wednesday practice. Those are full pads, and they kind of decrease as the week goes on. Shells come in on Thursday. Then Friday is just helmets, and it's more of a walkthrough on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something to think. A lot of times when you have a young team, a lot of rookies on the team, they hit that rookie wall. You hear that a lot about that in the NFL. Yeah, and guys start to break down. I think what it is you judge your team and how they are physically too. The Chiefs, for the first time in quite a while last week, were actually very, very healthy. Now going after this game, we'll talk about injuries in a little bit. You got Jamal Charles nicked up a little bit. You don't have a lot of depth at running back. So that's a very good point, and I think that Todd Haley will act accordingly. I know that the film sessions are still very prevalent and very long, despite how long or how short the team's on the field. So I get what you're saying. You're in the film room and you're exhausted from a practice and you're beat down. Sometimes those game plans go right over the head, in and out the ears. You're starting to snooze. And then the other hand of that is, hey, the team's won three games.
Well, other thing I look at too also is you have a brand new quarterback learning a new system, a coach learning a new system.
Yes.
Basically a running back that's just inherited the spot through Larry Johnson, which I was glad to see getting gone. So basically you have a very young team, and maybe the preparations are still there, but yet it's still a fairly young team that maybe if they're just missing a player too, as I see in your webpage, it's always about, Todd Haley coming in and saying, we got to execute a little bit better here and there, miss the block here, and maybe with just a little bit more film studies, book time type thing, just as you would as a rookie camp, things would get back in order.
Yeah, Leal, you bring up a great point. Thanks for your call. Film time is immeasurable how big of dividend that plays. You take what you look in the film room, and then you talk about in the meetings, and then you walk through it in the practice before the practices, and then you go full speed in the practices. And if there's a way to transfer what you're teaching the guys in the meeting room and translate that into better production on game day, I think the Chiefs will try it, and it's certainly a valid point and a great great idea. So we'll see what Coach Haley does here in the fourth quarter, if those practices get a little bit shorter or if they get longer, and we'll see what's going on. A little bit of news from the community relations front. This Sunday against the Buffalo Bills is the Toys for Tots drive. Last Sunday was the cleats. Chiefs fans came out, bought a whole bunch of cleats to Arrowhead. So there's going to be a lot of youth football teams that needed cleats, that needed pads. Chiefs fans stepped up last weekend. We thank you for all of you that came to the game and donated cleats. This week, bring an unwrapped toy. Right when you come in the gate, it's real easy. There'll be big boxes, Toys for Tots. I think it's like the 44th year that the Chiefs have done this with Toys for Tots. Maybe I think I read it somewhere, is the longest NFL partnership with Toys for Tots. Great cause. It's an awesome turnout every single year. And some kids will get some very good holiday gifts, courtesy of Chiefs fans. And earlier today, you can watch on KCChiefs.com later this evening. We were out at Oak Hill Elementary School in Overland Park, Kansas. Awesome time. There was a fifth grader named Luke there. And Luke won a sweepstakes at JCPenney, where he got to take a player to school. And he took a player that we'll talk about a lot here on this program. I'm sure you guys are already chatting about him in the Cover It Live forum. We'll talk a little bit about his production of late. Matt Castle got to go to school for the ultimate show-and-tell project with Luke, and Matt was teaching him all things about football. They had an all-school assembly. Very, very cool deal. It was – there's folks from the NFL office there filming this thing, and then Adam, you're uploading some stuff for the NFL Network. This one you might be able to see it on NFL Network this evening as well for that visit.
And I do believe that was an alma mater of
Coincidentally, that's where alma mater of me. That's where I went to elementary school. So I walked back in there this morning, and I walked straight through the doors. You know, elementary school that you need to check in, and I was going straight through, and I was going to go to the left because that's where the office was, and I walk in and, sir, excuse me, sir. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, no, sir, you need to come here. The office when I was there, 20 years ago, was straight back and to the left. Well, now it's directly to your right when you walk in the door. So I was like 20 feet past.
I'm surprised I didn't recognize you, Josh.
Well, I said, you know, I went to this school and I made plenty of trips to the office and it used to be right there. And they said, oh, yeah, that's our reading lab or something now. I said, oh, okay, well. I was going to the reading lab. But anyway, it was a great thing. You can see that on kcchiefs.com later this evening and maybe even the NFL Network tonight. Matt Cassel went to school, picked this guy up in a limo, picked the fourth grader up in a limo. This kid was on cloud nine and had his Cassel jersey out. And they went through a lot of stuff in the gym. And you could tell this kid was high motor because all the other kids, they're playing. And, you know, there's definitely some athletes there, fourth, fifth graders. You can tell who the athletes are going to be. And none of them are really breaking out in a complete sweat. But this kid, Cassel's kid Luke, this guy is just drenched from head to toe. He's running all over the place. He's having a great time and running. You can tell it was just the excitement. And when you got three wins and things look down and you go and see stuff like that and those kids, it just gives you a different perspective. Coming in this Sunday are the Buffalo Bills. And usually on this program, depending on our callers and how much dialogue we get, we sometimes get to the opponent and we sometimes don't. I can't wait for this one, Brad. We'll preview the Bills later, but you know who's coming to town, don't you?
Beast Mode.
Beast Mode. Beast Mode's coming to town. Introduce everyone to Beast Mode right now. It's your civic duty.
A beast lurks inside him. Can't control it. It overpowers him. Rage, destruction, domination, it courses through my veins. I can feel it changing, waiting to a breath to be unleashed. But I become it. I become the beast. Beast Mode described me on the field as uncontainable, uncontrollable. It's just a force. I won't be stopped. I can't be stopped. When I step in between them lines, Beast Mode. Beast Mode. It came about one of my coach always called me a beast from Pop Warner, and it kind of stuck with me. So when I got up to the league, that was my mind state that I was going to be a beast. Took it and ran with it. Every hero has a villain. Every star and alter ego. Mine is within me. And when I step onto that field, Beast Mode. Being a beast to me is 4-for-1. They know you running the ball. You know you running the ball. The people over in China watching the game know you running the ball. You get that ball, you go get that first down. Run, run, run. When I get the ball, my mentality is get to that end zone by any means necessary. No matter who I gotta run through, run by, it's gotta get done. When I get to the hole and it's a defender there, it's me or him. I'm going to lower that shoulder and tell him to come on with it. Come on with it. Want him to feel that ground. Defender come up to tackle me, I want him to feel that ground. I would describe the point of impact as a wonderful feeling. That's why I thrive on contact. When that defender see me coming again, he going to have to respect me. The next collision, it depends on who bringing it, you know. Some of them come on with it. Some of them be a little timid. But I'm coming with the same force every play. Public service announcement. There's a wild beast running loose. Beware. The beast can be captured, but he cannot be tamed. Mode, beast mode, beast mode, beast mode.
Hey, hey. Well, there's your public service announcement for the day, everybody.
Beast mode, beast mode, beast mode. And uncontrollable, unattainable.
Fun fact, he doesn't even lead the team in rushing this year. Fred Jackson.
Yeah, for those of you, we didn't even say who it is. For those of you
Marshawn
that aren't
Lynch,
Marshawn Lynch, for those of you who aren't big Bills fans, this guy is their running back, and he this was the thing. Was that his rookie year? 2 or 3 years ago, ESPN did that?
Yeah, ESPN special? Did something like that. And he did, as many of you Chiefs fans hopefully have forgotten, last year, when the Bills came into town, Lynch went crazy on the Chiefs. He only had 79 rushing yards, but there was one run where he was carrying a guy, I forget what was on his back, and just ran, was running through people, 20 carries, 79 yards, and a touchdown last year. This year, Fred Jackson almost has 700 yards, and Marshawn Lynch is just over 300.
That's the way it's going to be with him. He's going to bring the shoulder and punish guys similar to the way that Larry Johnson did, you know, 3-4 years ago for this Chiefs team. Stopping Marshawn Lynch and his sidekick Fred Jackson, which maybe now it's Fred Jackson and his sidekick Marshawn Lynch. Jackson's now the starter, although they both are playing. That's going to be crucial for this Chiefs team. 143 yards on the ground that Chiefs give up per game. Well, guess what? You stop the run, which they had been doing until that number is inflated from last week. The Chiefs had been stopping the run very well until No. Sean Moreno and Carrell Buckhalter ran wild last weekend. But if you can stop the Buffalo Bills run game, you probably stop the Buffalo Bills. They've got the longest active streak in the NFL of having a quarterback who has not thrown for 300 yards. The last 300-yard passer to 50 games, by the way. That's the longest in the NFL. The last Buffalo quarterback to throw for over 300 yards was J.P. Losman. That happened back in 2006 at Houston. The Jets come in second. They've had 46 straight games without a 300-yard passer. And Cincinnati Bengals, that's really surprising. Carson Palmer has gone 28 games. Hasn't thrown for 300-plus yards since 2007. That one is actually really, really surprising me. But Buffalo, longest streak, and they haven't come close to it on the number of occasions. So you stop Beast Mode, you stopped Fast Freddy, and you probably stopped the Buffalo Bills. It will definitely be a point of emphasis for the Chiefs as they move forward this weekend. Let's talk progress, Brad. Everybody wants to talk about progress. That's what everyone wants to see. It's the key word. It's what Coach Haley talks about. And, of course, a lot has changed in 2 weeks when we were talking about the progress that this team makes. Well, I could feed you stats like this. I could tell you that just looking at defense 12 games into the season, compared to last year, the Chiefs have given up 14 fewer points. They're averaging 19.9 fewer rushing yards allowed per game. They've allowed 7 fewer touchdowns. They're 9% lower on conversion rates on third downs. They forced 7.7% more 3-and-outs. 8 fewer first downs. I can tell you all that. That's all improvements from last year. But let's call a spade a spade. When you're 31st, 32nd, 30th in the league in defense last year, and you're making slight improvements, you're still in the bottom of the league. And the Chiefs are. And that's what Haley talked about last week. He said, look, there's some good individual efforts on this team, but let's look overall. We're a 30th ranked defense. There's not a lot of things going right on this team defensively. And so let's call a spade when we see one. I'm not going to shower you with these stats, but I will tell you that when you look at this 12-game report, there is something to hang the hat on. And this points to the bigger problem for the Chiefs. The Chiefs rank 8th in the NFL in forcing 3-and-outs on 25% of opponents' possessions. Okay, this time last year, the Chiefs ranked 31st in that department. The defense was bad, and they weren't forcing any 3-and-outs. Now, yardage-wise, the defense is a little bit better, but they're pretty similar to last year, but they're forcing a ton more 3-and-outs. So what's that tell you? The defense is better, but they're giving up these big plays. How can you have the top 10 in forcing 3-and-outs? That means they're not getting 10 yards. They're having to punt. But then when it comes to total yards, you're in the bottom 10. It doesn't add up. It's because these plays in between, you have your 60-yard bomb, you have your 40-yard gasser, you have your 35-yard strike, you have your 2 to Miles Austin that go in the overtime in the fourth quarter. That's where the problem is with this team. We saw it at Denver, 10-plus runs of 10 yards or more. That is where the problem is. So the defense as a whole is improving, but they're not consistent. Not consistently stopping those big plays. And it's been that way this entire year. It's almost like a broken record. But that stat right there shows you. 8th in the league in forcing 3-and-outs right now. The Chiefs defense. But they're in the bottom 3, bottom 2 in the league in total defense. It doesn't make sense. Last year, they were where they should have been. They're the bottom 2 or 3 in the league in total defense. And they allowed the second or third most times without a 3-and-out. Here's another one for you. The Chiefs ranked 16th in the league in third down, 37.5% third down defense. 16th, they're right in the middle of the pack. Last year at this time, the Chiefs ranked 31st. Opponents were converting third downs nearly 50% of the time. So we're forcing 3-and-outs. We're right in the middle of the pack and forcing teams to punt on those third downs. But at the same time, we're giving up a ton of yards. It's big plays, it's a lot of yards, and that's the problem. It's consistency, And that is where the progress is. I can show you stats, but let's call a spade a spade. Slight improvement over one of the bottom defenses in the league. Big plays, consistency. That is what's haunting the Chiefs. The ultimate progress you're going to see on this team is the quarter system, followed by how this team reacts next year in year two of Todd Haley and Scott Pioli. You asked for change this season. You got it in the offseason. Coming off two wins. It's not a miracle worker. There's no elixir to just drink and turn things around and all of a sudden be 12-4 team. This takes time. I know fans don't want to hear it. Say it's year one. I know it feels like year three and a half. We've all been there. It's not, though. We got the change we needed, and I think we have to give it time, and that goes for the next guy we're going to talk about here in a little bit, and that's Matt Cassel. And he's taking a brunt of heat right now from all angles after his past two games, and we'll read his line. It hasn't been pretty. But there's progress, and we won't go with slight statistical progress. Nobody cares about that. Progress is wins. Progress is losses. But you've got to keep perspective and the open mind. We've got Barry. He said I think this is probably the right Barry from St. Louis. He said he was going to go for a personal streak of calling into Chiefs Live. This is his fourth straight week. Welcome back, Barry. How you doing, man?
Good afternoon, Josh. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
It's a beautiful day, even though it seems like a dark day, especially around the Kansas City area. We're back in St. Louis now, so we're safe from the firestorm.
And you've got the old Rams firestorm, if anyone even cares there. I don't know if they do or not.
Well, I'll tell you, man, you know, sitting through that game on Sunday was tough. And being out there in the cold, especially when you don't have a lot of hair on your head, you know, you start to shake in the fourth quarter, and you start thinking about going out to the van and eating a hot hamburger, you know, but it is what it is, and one of the things that we all have to come together on and all understand right now is that this team has to make it through this process. And we'd like to be able to try and, you know, put together a couple of solid home performances with this Buffalo and Cleveland game coming up. This team has to continue to build and continue to move forward. And right now, we're seeing glaring differences between playoff teams and ourselves, and there's a reason behind that.
Sure,
because there's many more pieces to the puzzle in those organizations than there are in Kansas City right now. As fans, we have to be patient, Josh, and as an organization, I think that they've made it clear to us fans that they're doing everything they can do to get better every single week.
Well, I think you're right, Barry. The problem is that, and I think that we've seen that. The problem, I think, that the overall big picture the fans are seeing is the last 2 weeks. And when you're outscored 87-27, it's like getting cold clocked on the side of the head. You know, right when you'd had significant progress leading up to those games, and it's like, oh, we're back on square one. And that's why I think this fourth quarter going forward for this Chiefs team is very important to the overall progress of this team. It's important to the fan base. It's important to the coaching staff. And I think it may carry some of the most importance of any team sitting with three wins in the league right now is what it means to the Chiefs. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, Josh. And right now, as Chiefs fans, we really don't need to be concerned with how high or how low our first-round draft pick is going to be. We need to be thinking, and I'm sure the Chiefs are already thinking this, I'm absolutely positive of this, that we need to build on something at the end of this season. We need to salvage the 2009 season. We need to be able to, at the end of the day, at the end of Week 17, hang our hats on something and feel good about this team moving into the 2010 season. Now, having said that, on defense, you know, you're making a point there, Josh. We have some very, very talented players on this defense, and I know a lot of people don't want to hear that right now, but, you know, as Todd Haley was talking about in his press conference just yesterday, you know, the defense has to play as an 11-man unit, and right now, we're seeing flashes and we're not seeing flashes. And defensively, you know, our coordinator's going to take a lot of heat over this, and some players are going to take a lot of heat over this, but the bottom line is they have to continue to get better on a week-to-week basis, and they have to continue to work as a unit. Because, you know, when you were speaking about third downs before, Josh, we have improved in this area, and we have improved in sacks this year. Any way you look at it, and I don't care who you are, you cannot make the argument that this team is not improved from last year. You just can't do it.
Well, yeah, you're right, Barry. If you watch every single game, and we talk improvement, It's tough to say, okay, which team would win a game between last year's and this year. I say who cares. Last year's team was a two-win team. Right now this team's a three-win team. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. The point is progress moving forward, and Barry, you hit on the head, and thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
And to jump on with that, with progress moving forward and building towards 2010 and the things the Chiefs have to do, part of that is sticking with Matt Cassel, and I think that it would be completely counterproductive for the Chiefs to go with Brody Croll the rest of this year unless injury dictates that. And Coach said yesterday that Matt Cassel is indeed the starter. He reiterated that yesterday. Actually, he said that after the Denver game as well. And Matt Cassel's your franchise quarterback, people. This is your guy. He's going to be here this year. He's going to be here next year. And this team is going to build with Matt Cassel. Now, how Matt Cassel writes his story in the Chiefs record books is up to Matt Cassel. Is he going to be a guy like Trent Green, who struggled throughout his first year with the Chiefs? Trent, T-R-I-N-T, Trent Green, throwed picks, 24 interceptions Trent Green threw his first season as a Chief. Matt Cassel's numbers, besides the picks, through 12 games, wrote about in the blog today, they're eerily similar to Trent Green's. They've attempted about the same amount of passes, completed about the same number of passes, have a quarterback rating that's very similar. Trent Green threw about 400 more yards. The offense was a lot more wide open with Dick Vermeil right there. And the difference, Trent Green, 9 touchdowns, 16 picks through 11 games. Matt Cassel, 13 TDs, 9 picks. Moving forward with Matt Cassel is vital for this team. Matt Cassel is viable for this team. This team's put money into him. They're building an offense around him. And he's showing that he can be a leader. How he bounces back is going to determine his future with the Chiefs. But Matt Cassel is the guy going forward. End of story. He still gives the Chiefs the best chance to win. And until that changes, Matt Cassel will be your guy. But that doesn't cover up for the past 2 weeks. Matt Cassel, obviously, the Chiefs are 0-2, just 29 of 60 over the last 2 weeks. That's only 48% of his completions, 1 touchdown, 3 picks. The quarterback rating comes in at 45.3, just 1 play of 25 or more yards. That's tough. It's a bad 2-week skid. It's been an out-of-sync offense of late outside Jamaal Charles, and we saw exactly what Jamaal Charles can do to this offense and what he's done for this offense. When he got nicked twice in that game, the Chiefs' offense did not have hardly any success without number 25 in the backfield. It was kind of eerily similar to what we saw before Chris Chambers got here, before Jamaal Charles was brought in to be the starting running back. There just wasn't a lot there, and you don't have a Dwayne Bowe right now. Dwayne Bowe will be suspended through this week. There was some confusion in the blog during the game. Dwayne Bowe returns for Cleveland. He still has to serve a suspension through this week, and I believe he's eligible to return to Arrowhead on Monday. He hasn't been around at all during his four-week suspension. Can't come to any workouts, any team meetings or anything. So Dwayne Bowe has been MIA, probably just sitting at home. And when he gets back, he's going to have to be ready to work because this team's going to need him down the stretch. Yesterday, Coach Haley talked about Matt Cassel and how he is still the starting quarterback. Let's hear what he had to say.
He told us after the game yesterday that he's your starting quarterback against Buffalo. You have not changed your mind on that?
No. No, again, based on the things that I just said, without repeating them, I'm going to play the guys to give us the best chance to win, and Matt is one of those guys right now. Again, that was a collective effort, you know, for us specifically offensively, and without going into details and some of those things, I'm feel pretty confident in Matt and his abilities, and that he'll bounce back and have another great week of preparation and give us a chance to beat Buffalo.
How's he been holding up? I mean, this has not been the easiest of situations for him. I mean, he's still a developing quarterback. How's he been? I mean, is he strong enough to take what's going on here?
Well, he's better equipped to answer that question. As the head coach and coordinator, I think the kid's a tough guy. And generally when you're tough, you can handle adversity. And that's the quarterback's job, is to stand adversity in the face and overcome. And like I said, I think Matt is back at it today already. You know, we've reviewed this tape, made our corrections. He's on to Buffalo and figuring out a way that to best help us beat the Buffalo Bills.
Well, there you go, Coach Haley. Obviously sticking with Matt Cassel, as he will be the starting quarterback for the Buffalo Bills and likely throughout the rest of the season and going into 2010. John from Cover Live here brings up a great point. He says, you can't compare 2001 and 2009. And he's right. You can't. The Chiefs were in two totally different situations. The only similarities were that you can compare are the back end stories between Trent Green, Matt Cassel. Both quarterbacks coming in their first year, handed the reins to the Chiefs offensive wagon. They both come in under a first year head coach, Trent Green under Dick Vermeil, Matt Cassel under Todd Haley. They both come in after being primarily career backups before they came to the Chiefs. Both of them had about a little bit of, Trent Green had, what, one season as a starter and then had another season where he started about five games. So he had about 20 starts coming in, 21 starts coming into Kansas City. Matt Cassel had 15 starts coming to Kansas City. Very similar in that. Both had served backup roles. But past that, the Chiefs were in very, very different situations. Trent Green took a ton of criticism in 2001. Why? Because he had a guy like Priest Holmes that was getting 2,100 yards from scrimmage, just darting all over the place. He had three Pro Bowlers on offense alone. He had Will Shields. He had Tony Gonzalez. He had all these players and pieces, and the Chiefs were a much different team. They were coming off of a 9-7 or 7-9 in 2000 in Gunn's final year. Gunther was 16-16 as a head coach. I want to say they were 7-9.
I believe that's right. 7-9.
7-9, much different than a 2-14 team. Trent Green takes over, throws a ton of picks. The offense still puts up a ton of yards, and Trent took a ton of criticism for it, but he bounced back. He bounced back in a big way. The next 4 years, back-to-back-to-back-to-back years, Trent Green posts a quarterback rating of over 90. His quarterback rating that first year was in the 70s. It was bad. It was right around where Matt Cassel's is. So you look at it, and you look how these guys rebound and the tools around them, and that's going to be the thing with Cassel, is rebounding from this experience. He's had some great games. He's had the fourth quarter drive against Dallas. He's had the big drives against the Steelers. He's shown those. In fact, you know, this is why I think that Matt Cassel is going to be all right. Fortitude. That's how Trent Green was able to overcome the criticisms, overcome the pressure on him after 2001 and go on to be a two-time Pro Bowler with this team. He's the leading pass. He has, despite that poor season to start, he has the best passer rating in Chiefs history. Career passer rating in Chiefs history. That's better than Lynn Dawson. Threw for tons and tons of yards because he could bounce back. Matt Cassel, what can you tell about his fortitude and his toughness and his guts? We see him getting up after hit, after hit, after hit. Well, here's a little stat for you. No NFL passer owns more fourth quarter touchdowns than Matt Cassel this year. You're like, what? The Chiefs that rank, what do we rank in scoring, Brad? We average 16 points a game. The Chiefs, who are 28th in scoring, have a quarterback who throws more fourth quarter passes than Peyton Manning, than Tom Brady, than anyone. Well, some of those have come in some garbage time in games, but a lot of them have come in those big fourth quarters where he's leading a furious comeback against Jacksonville, or he's pushing that game into overtime against Dallas, or pushing into overtime against the Steelers. And those are the games that it's going to take moving forward for Matt Cassel and what he has to do to cement his place. And how he responds is ultimately the next chapter in Cassel's career as a quarterback. Coach Haley talked a little bit about how Matt Cassel has to do to move forward. Let's hear it.
Well, I think each and every one of these experiences he has as a quarterback, and that being one of them, you know, now he's been taken out of a game and had to watch his backup play. You know, it's the big thing with the quarterback is being able to stand in the face of adversity. And yesterday was adversity. and how guys respond to that adversity. And it may not be in that game, you know, because obviously you're taking him out and you're putting somebody else in. How they respond, I think, will tell a lot about guys playing that position, you know, and that's not a position for the faint at heart. And I think that Matt's a tough guy. And like I said, he's already on to Buffalo. He's intent on improving his performance, as I think everybody has to be. And that's what he's going to do.
You mentioned protect.
Well, that's Coach Haley. Obviously, just like we just talked about, Matt Castle moving forward. And these types of struggles, unfortunately, with a rebuilding team, are going to be there. This is all part of the process, everybody. It doesn't just eliminate all those things we saw over the first 8 weeks of the season. Don't just go away after we roll off back-to-back wins. And that's been prevalent over the past 2 weeks. The Chiefs have to survive this. Matt Castle has to survive this. But guess what? The U.S. fans have to survive it, too. You've been through a rough patch. 3 wins right now this year, 2 wins the year before, 4 the year before that, 9-7 in playoffs the year before that. Haven't had a playoff win in quite some time. You guys have to survive too. Greg Williams was on the radio this morning. He's got ties to the Kansas City area. He is one of the, if not the best defensive coordinators in the league with the New Orleans Saints. He was on the radio. I caught him on the way into work today. Talked about how he's good friends with both Scott Pioli and Todd Haley, and how, look, this is a thing where they're going to build it the right way, but they've got to build it from the ground up. And it's not like steering a ship and just turning it around. It's like taking a huge military tank or some aircraft carrier and turning that thing around. The stuff we saw from Miami last year and Atlanta and teams like that, those aren't the norm. Right now what's going on in Kansas City, those are the norm. Those rebuilding projects when you had guys like Jimmy Johnson going 1-15 before he got in the team and built it the way he wanted in Dallas, that's the norm. There's tons and tons and tons of precedent for this. And the Chiefs right now are following in that common theme. They're not having the spurt like the Dolphins had a year ago or the Falcons. I mean, both of those teams, they're still technically alive in the playoffs, but I don't even know what Miami's record is anymore. But Atlanta gets beat by 30 points at home to Philadelphia, and they're probably going to miss the playoffs this year too. It's long-term success, and I think that the guys that are in here are going to build it the right way, and time will tell. No one can predict the future, but it's all about surviving. Brad, we had Coach Haley talking about surviving a little bit. We don't need to play that right now. Let's move into the running back situation. This is quite a change for the Chiefs. Obviously, so much of a change from Larry Johnson when he was here and where the Chiefs were. But once Larry Johnson left, he felt pretty good about the Chiefs' rushing attack. You had a running back by committee, and you had 3 guys handling reps in a way to protect Jamaal Charles. Jamaal Charles got the most reps, then it scaled down to Colby Smith, got a handful, and then about half of what Colby got, Dantrell Savage got. Well, now the Chiefs' running game looks a lot different than it did when they brought their running back by committee. Colby Smith, gone for the season. Ankle injury this time. Knee injury last year. It's tough. Harder than anybody. And he, for some reason, can't figure out how to stay healthy. And it's a big loss for the Chiefs. Dantrell Savage, hopefully he can go this week. He's been nursing that ankle injury. He's a big loss for the Chiefs. What does it do? It puts more pressure on Jamaal Charles. It puts more touches in his hands. And yeah, he's an electric playmaker, but he's also not a real big guy. He's not a guy you want touching it 25 or more times a game, because then you're getting banged up, and you'll see a game like he had last Sunday where he gets nicked and has to come out of the game. And when he comes out of the game, the offense suffers. But guess what? There's not a lot behind him. The guys backing him up, you can't expect a whole lot from Javaris Williams right now. He was a 7th-round pick. And he made his NFL debut. The guy's been on the practice squad the entire season. There's shape, there's practice shape, there's workout shape, and there's game shape. Game speed is a whole nother thing. And Javaris Williams is a guy I like. I liked him in training camp, and I really like him. I think that he can eventually be a short yardage back for this team, a guy who who can pound it in the middle. The guy is a rock. But his debut wasn't so hot. Two carries, minus 5 yards. The other guy is Tim Castile. How the Chiefs are using him, that's another topic for another day. It's very interesting. You get a guy, you'll see Castile come in there, take those traps up the middle, kind of like Jackie Battle was doing before he went to IR. He takes those traps. He's in certain passing situations. He is part of that throwback pass. Obviously, he might have the best arm of any of the running backs. And then they shove him out and bring in Mike Cox when it's time to do some other blocking assignments. So Castile's a guy to watch, and he's a tweener. He's a swing back. But he's probably not also an every down back to when you bring in Tim Castile and you bring in Javaris Williams, you're not getting the same thing that you're getting from Jamaal Charles. And you're not getting that with Dantrell Savage either, but Savage is still like a mini Charles. You can still run things, give that guy a breather and some less touches. But with injuries, it's kind of altered the way the Chiefs have been able to do it. And you got to wonder going forward, what happens with Jamaal Charles on the kickoff returns? He's so valuable there. He's so incredibly valuable. We saw him in the Pittsburgh Steelers game and what he can do to change a game on kickoff returns. But if the Chiefs stay banged up, it's going to be the Quentin Lawrence show on the kickoff returns, because you got to keep that guy healthy. Because Jamaal Charles, he's averaging right now, over his past four games, his four starts, over 180 yards from scrimmage per game. That's rushing, that's receiving, that's returns. He's produced five TDs and obviously that 97-yard kickoff return for a touchdown. So Jamaal Charles is the guy that you've got to be able to give rest, and he has to be healthy. He's a must-healthy for this Chiefs offense. And what are the Chiefs going to do with their crowded running back committee that's now a bit depleted? Coach Haley talked a little bit about that yesterday.
Everybody seems to, I mean, hard to go with, even in the best of circumstances, with just one guy. Can Castile serve both? Just talk about who's next up when you got
to. Yeah, I've talked. The positive of picking up a player like Tim Castile to me is his versatility. You know, and he's played a lot of plays for us already for a guy that, again, we didn't, you know, we pick up a couple weeks ago, you know, in some critical plays we've put him in. You know, a fourth down against the Steelers yesterday, he was part of the, you know, the throwback play we called. But he does have some versatility. He's a little bigger back that, you know, he had a couple carries yesterday. I thought, you know, a couple good carries, which were positive, you know. And again, we'll manage whoever's in there and try to manage them as best we can, and yet and still at the same time get guys in there that can help us. You know, Javaris, that was his first action. You know, he'll build on that. You know, but. He's been on the practice squad all year and really got his first opportunity to get his feet wet. And so now he's got a little experience under his belt. But, again, we wouldn't have had him in there or to the game if we didn't think he could help us.
Do you plan on addressing the running back?
Isaac asks on the chat room, Josh, are they using Charles too much? I tell you what, Isaac, that's a good question. I don't know what too much is for Jamaal Charles. His career high in total touches is 25. That was at Oakland a few weeks ago. We play a game called Over Under. If you watch our live pregame report with Mitch Holthus and I, where I set up some over and unders, and I ask him, hey, over and under. One of the questions was, I said, over and under, Jamaal Charles, 28 total touches this Sunday. This is before the Denver Bronco games. And Mitch goes, oh, under, under, under. And I said, Mitch, are you sure? I mean, there's if he's returning kicks and there's no Colby Smith, there's no Dantrell Savage, he's going to probably get five or six receptions, and then he's going to get the brunt of the ground game. How is he not? I said 28. That's three over his career high in total touches. I think he goes over. After the first quarter on Sunday, Jamaal Charles was on pace for 44 touches. Is that too much? Yes, that's too much for Jamaal Charles. I don't know how much is too much. I think probably in the low 20s is optimal. Obviously, he didn't. Injuries played a part in that game, and he didn't have anywhere near his career high in total touches. So that's a great question, Isaac, and I have no idea how much too much is for Jamaal Charles. And I guess it's something that we'll have to keep an eye on. And I also think that part of the fumbling he's had and the fumble we saw, so obviously he was beat up. He said he didn't have it on. I think that his total touches go into a little bit. That's when you start getting a little lazy holding that ball, and you don't have it gripped quite as tight, and that's a problem in the fumble game. Also looking here in the chat room, a lot of people talking free agency. I just want to send out I don't know how free agency is going to work this year. It's an uncapped year. This is a totally new way of doing free agency, everybody. The way I understand, there may not be a lot of guys out there. It may be pretty bare. The way I understand it, each team can protect up to three players. You can tag like three guys. And the teams that finish in the top eight in the playoffs, they can't sign a free agent until they lose a free agent. So that would obviously benefit the Chiefs in that regard. But if I'm correct, and I'll do a lot of research for this when we're in the off season. I've just done a little bit of reading because the whole uncapped year, that's a new thing for me too. But if what I think I read is the right way, you can protect up to three guys in a certain number of situations. That's 3 times 32. That's a lot of players that are protected, and what does that do? That leaves the cover dry. Now, the question for you is, if you have look at the Chiefs and you have three free agents, which three would you say, oh, we have to keep? And I'll print out the free agent list here at the end of the year, and we'll go through that. And if that's the case where the Chiefs get to keep three, we'll talk to fans and say, hey, you know, Derek Johnson restricted. Is he, we're tagging him. Is such and such. Are we tagging this guy? And we'll talk about that. But free agency as we know it, it could be a lot different this year. And that's something to keep in mind. So all these guys, you know, Julius Peppers coming a free agent, he may not just be out there for the highest bidder. And, you know, spend your money wisely because with the way the CBA, no one also knows how the CBA is going to work out and exactly what the new union agreements are going to be, what the salary cap agreements are going to be. So this is going to be a very, very interesting offseason, primarily on the free agency stage. Really for the future of the NFL as these labor negotiations continue to go through. I also saw someone say, Josh, Nick, I think, said it. This was a while ago. Said, Josh, why were you crying on the sidelines in the Alabama Florida game? That's the Tim Tebow reference. Some people for some
spitting image.
I don't see it. I don't. But you're not the first, Nick. And someone asked me that in the office yesterday, and my answer was, did you see that postgame? There's a lot of Tim Tebow haters out there. I like the guy. He's a winner, and that's all you can ask for. That whole press conference, no one's going to work harder than we are. That was goofy and stuff, but that's who he is. But the guy's a winner, and I respect that. But what's funny with Tebow, that was cracking up. He's crying on the sidelines and just, you know, Adam Morrison style. But he's saying great things about Alabama. I'm so happy for Alabama. I wish them luck. Tear. They're such a classy team. They're such a classy group of guys. And Brody Croyle is probably give me hell for this when he sees me or Wallace or all the Bobby Greenwood or the number of Alabama guys we have in our locker room. But they're so classy. They're so great. Right when he gets done saying that, they cut to a picture of the Alabama players. They're on the SEC logo doing the chomp and then doing this. I was like, oh, that's priceless. You can't make production better than that. So that's your classy Alabama football team. Of course, they're also pretty darn happy that they were going to be in the national title. Sacks this year, I guess, is our final topic. Tom Bahali, good Lord. He was in beast mode, Brad.
Yeah, he's in his own whole nother level. What did he end up with? 3 sacks and 2 forced fumbles? Is that correct?
Three sacks, two forced fumbles. One led to a touchdown. Beast mode. Uncontrollable. Unattainable. Unstoppable. Put his shoulder down.
He's been playing out of his mind like that. I know they haven't been translating into wins, but all the wins that we have had and games we've been in, that guy has made the transition, I think, more than a lot of people expected him to do. And he's
there's two guys. We saw the transition going from hand in the ground to a 2-point stance is one of the toughest in football. Because now you got to worry about, I'm in space. I'm trying to keep my head on a swivel and see who's coming into my zone. And it's a whole different ball game when you're dropping in the flats and you got little Dante Halls running around you and you're trying to keep that instead of just fighting off defensive end or offensive tackles as a defensive end. And we've seen two guys. Sometimes that switch is the end of a guy's run in a certain city. I mean, Tom Bahali, if he doesn't step up, He probably goes and plays a 4-3 somewhere else if he can't play a 3-4. Obviously, he can. Same with Elvis Dumervil. He's leading the league in sacks. He had a sack. He has 15 sacks on the year. He did the exact same thing as Tom Holley this offseason in Denver. Went from hand in the dirt, 4-3 defensive end, to an outside pass rusher as an outside linebacker, and the results have been incredible for Elvis Dumervil and Tom Holley. 3 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. He came in beast mode, and you know what? There was no better way to honor Derek Thomas than the way that Tom Holley did. Mike Vrabel talked after the game. He said, hey, you know, hats off to Tom Holley. We all need to play the way he is. He played his ass off that game, and he said, we didn't honor Derek the way we should have, but Tomba sure did. And Tomba doesn't do interviews. It's a thing for him this year, a new thing. But he did get a quote in the paper for the first time in all season, and all he said was, I respect Derek. And, you know, that sack and strip looked very much like Derek Thomas, Tomba. Got just a few more minutes here.
Got a little special surprise for you here, Josh.
Special surprise
for
me?
Go ahead, Adam. Why don't you move that over? Chiefs fans, I want your reaction on this.
How does this
do you see the resemblance there? I got a picture of Tim Tebow.
Oh, Lord.
Look at that. Josh, look right at the camera.
Hey, what's he doing? I don't even see your computer. What's he doing?
You know? Great. He's in a suit and tie. That looks fantastic.
I don't see it. I don't see it.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I just don't. I don't.
Had to do it.
Yeah. All right.
So, sorry to throw you under the bus there.
Yeah, well, what bowl are they going to again?
They're going to the Sugar Bowl to play the Brian Kelly fight in Cincinnati.
What's the deal with the BCS? Do we want to get on this? And I'm not even talking about the playoffs. And
I think that's a great matchup.
No, that's fine. But the matchup I don't want to see is Boise State and TCU. Put TCU up against one of the other at-large guys.
I
want to see
it.
Those teams go against the big boys. I love when we got to see Boise State go against Oklahoma a few years back. I don't want to see the two mid-majors battling for mid-major superiority. I want to see the mid-major.
No. I mean, if one of them wins the tight game, which honestly both those guys are great both those teams are great teams, but you want to see David and Goliath. You want to see Boise State, Oklahoma. You want to see Utah, Alabama. You don't want to see.
You know what it is, Brad? David. It's the man keeping the little guy down. That's exactly what it is.
I couldn't agree more.
Well, I do have an announcement here. It's 1 o'clock, and that means we are expiring on our time here on Chiefs Live on KCChiefs.com. Chiefs fans, there are 3,500 tickets that need to be sold for this game not to be blacked out this Sunday. That's right. The Chiefs are facing a blackout this Sunday if 3,500 tickets aren't sold. This is all part of the economy. We knew it would affect Kansas City eventually. It's affected places like Jacksonville. Hasn't had a game on television the entire season. That includes their home opener. San Diego had to extend their deadline right up until we went and played them. They almost were blacked out during a Monday night football game. 3,500 tickets to sell. It's time to step up, support your team. There's a notion that, oh, well, if it's blacked out, I'll just go to a sports bar and watch the game. No, you can't. DirecTV, NFL Sunday Ticket, that's blacked out too in the market. If you want to go watch the game, you're going to have to go up to, like, Omaha or something. I don't know. Or go down to Wichita or wherever. Whatever's not the TV circle, whatever mile radius it is, 70, 80 mile radius. And, so 3,500 tickets need to be sold. I would go out if you're interested in going to the game. There's plenty of seats available, some good tickets, and this is keep your Chiefs on TV. 3,500 tickets need to be sold before the blackout, and we'll see what happens. I wouldn't assume that KCTV5 will buy out some of the tickets. You hear a lot on the TV and radios of other cities. Hey, you know, the TV is just going to buy it up because they'll lose their ad revenue. I wouldn't assume it. So I'd get out there and buy some seats and make sure that this game is on TV locally in the Kansas City area so you can see your Chiefs. Anyway, what better way to see the Chiefs than to see them live and to see them take on beast mode, beast mode, beast mode. Thanks for joining us on KCChiefs.com for Chiefs Live on a Tuesday. See everybody.